Everything is better on a boat, and your vacation is no exception. This year, experience the world's most beautiful destinations aboard your own private yacht charter with The Moorings. Our fleet of modern, custom-designed yachts is just one reason we were recently voted Best Caribbean Yacht Charter Company by readers of Caribbean Journal. So when you next explore the Virgin Islands, the Bahamas, or elsewhere, don't accept anything less than The Moorings. Your vacation time is precious, so make the most of your freedom on the water. Book your perfect charter at moorings.com. Nothing less than The Moorings.
89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. But with AI tools popping up everywhere, how do you separate the helpful from the hype? The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. With over 15 years of experience building responsible, secure AI, Grammarly isn't just another AI communication assistant. It's how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. Designed to fit the needs of business, Grammarly is backed by a user-first privacy policy and industry-leading security credentials. This means you won't have to worry about the safety of your company information. Grammarly also emphasizes responsible AI, so your company can avoid harmful bias. See why 70,000 teams and 30 million people trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise. That's grammarly.com/enterprise. Grammarly, enterprise-ready AI.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for part two of the review of the defense against the Broncos. Real big win. Good get-right game for the defense in terms of multiple items. Some nice gifts thrown in by the opposing quarterback. That's always nice. And some good play we're going to talk about at the individual level in the second part. If you didn't listen to the first part, please go back. Talked a lot about the pass rush. Lots of things that the Ravens did in terms of numbers and deception that were non-standard, very low numbers, very limited deception, largely because I think that Nix was making a number of unforced errors himself and didn't have particularly good passing results, even as the Ravens were giving him an incredible opportunity set that included 58% ample time and space. I'm sure that number might come up again in this episode, but there's a lot of detail on that, on what Nix's opportunity set was like, on why they gave up so much. We talked about certainly the shortage of defensive linemen being a big issue, about the team embracing variance. You have a big rundown on packages and what the Ravens played, how they used Hamilton, Simpson returning to a committed nickel role in this game and some of the success they had with that. Really did not play dime in this game, and that may be something they go back to, or it may be something that they try and continue to make use of Simpson on a expanded role, whether that means every down or just more downs, either is possible, I think. We talked about the return of Marcus Williams a little bit. We'll talk about that a little bit more in this episode. And we talked about some of the other gymnastics in the secondary and how they've moved players around and deactivated Eddie Jackson, of course, for this game. And anyway, hopefully it's a episode worth listening to. I'm doing the second episode solo again. Happens every once in a while. Somebody can't make it at the last moment. And I do these episodes solo. I do prefer to do them with somebody else if possible. All right, well, let's talk about some individual players. And this is the point where I ask the guest, which player would you like to talk about? But I guess I get to choose first here. I think the Ravens really felt the absence of Travis Jones in a massive way in this game. And they have now, ever since he got hurt, which happened back in the Tampa Bay game. He didn't finish strong in that game, played only a couple snaps in the last quarter while the Ravens really needed him on the field to get some good pass rush generated. He was hurt and couldn't do it. He didn't play He did play against the Browns, and he looked like he was just playing with his hands. Didn't look like he could push off with his feet at all. And I'm not saying that Travis Jones isn't an imposing human being just slapping his hands around, but he was a shadow of the Travis Jones we need him to be, who drives the pass rush from the inside, forces doubles from there, allows you to get 3 one-on-one matchups or make a choice and have committed eligible receivers to blocking those edge rushers, or even Matt Ebike, if you want to stick a running back as a secondary on him. But whatever, you know, however you throw it around, Travis Jones' one sack does not in any way reflect Travis Jones' value as a pass rusher. Travis Jones drives the Ravens' pass rush. Last year, it probably was equally true that Clowney was driving the Ravens' pass rush, but the interior guys were critically important, and the fact that they had three we really celebrated all year. But the fact of the matter is, Matt Ebike is not the pass rusher without Travis Jones kind of there to protect him. So Matt Ebike becomes a devastating pass rusher when he can work off of the fact that Travis Jones is commanding more attention than he is. And he needs to have that back. And that's going to take either Matt Ebike or Pierce to come back. We're told Pierce's injury is not season ending. We don't have any information on Jones, but he didn't play a single snap this week. The four defensive linemen who were otherwise active played every snap. So it's probably a case where he would have played in an emergency. It's a little bit similar to having Marcus Williams available and not playing him at all. The difference being is, I think last week people would have been happy to see Marcus Williams play some special teams, but they wouldn't have been, that's not something Travis Jones is going to do. So Travis Jones, hopefully be back soon enough. Maybe this was a way to get him right for Thursday. And they even thought maybe we can get through this game without him. If we can, then he'll really be good for Thursday. My guess is it's probably going to be multiple weeks until he's back being the guy we thought he was, or that he has been so far in the first 6 weeks or so of the season. And that's really a shame because he was having a fantastic year. He'd be one of the guys who you might look at as a Pro Bowler this year in terms of the quality of play and what he's how he's benefited the Ravens pass rush. And as bad as the Ravens pass defense has been, the Ravens sack total is still quite good. They are fifth now in the National Football League in sacks. Let me make sure I'm reporting that correctly at the team level. So by category on defense, yeah, the Ravens are, when I look at the entire NFL, they are fifth in the NFL with 28 sacks. The New York Giants, the leaders, have only 35. It's not so great that the Giants, Jets, Broncos, and Texans are the top four teams in the NFL at that, and the Browns are number next one down the line. It doesn't give you that warm, fuzzy feeling of we want to be like these other teams. But on the other hand, it's not that they haven't been getting sacks. They have been getting sacks, and they got four more in this game, despite the fact that all of them came on ample time and space plays, which I really hit on in the first episode. I've never seen anything like that. Never seen anything that weird that, you know, all four of the sacks, the quarterback has 3 seconds to throw before he's taken down. So anyway, the point being that, you know, you can talk about the pass rush being bad, and if they're worse in terms of sack rate, where they rank, I think it was 13th in terms of sack rate. Let's see if I have that here. Yeah, sacks per pass attempt. The Ravens are... that's on offense. They're doing very well on offense in terms of sacks per pass attempt. But they are 12th in the National Football League with 8.19% sacks per pass attempt. Now, the Giants are up at 14%. The Jets are 12%. And they've got Denver at 10.8 and Houston at 10.47. I mean, it does grade off, but that number is, you know, still very bearable. It's not a triple crown number anymore, and everybody wants to improve the pass rush. I'd like to improve it too. But I think that, you know, you probably have to embrace some things about scheme first. And I don't think adding an edge at this point, and trade deadline is tomorrow, of course, is going to provide the kind of increment to value that people think it will. So can you improve on Owe or Van Noy? Very doubtful. Okay. Can you improve on Ngakoue? Yeah, sure. Maybe that's possible. Can you improve on Ajabo? Sure. Give yourself more depth. Can you stick Adisa Isaac on IR? Maybe you can find a way to do that and not have a problem. But the improvement is fairly marginal because your top two guys are still pretty good. And you're not going to find somebody who's great. If you think Clowney is really the answer on that, I mean, I think Clowney is depth at this point, and he would be better playing with the Ravens, particularly if Jones is back. But that's the real problem, is Jones and Pierce not being there just hoses what the pass rush does as a whole. And you really have to turn to scheme to generate pass rush. So anyway, that the other positions where they could look for trade, of course, is interior defensive line. The one name being talked about makes all kinds of sense is Calais Campbell, because he'll certifiably give you some pass rush from the inside that other teams will have to scheme for. They'll have to figure out probably how to double team him, and you can have on passing downs in particular, you can play anywhere along that line, and you can get an advantage with Matt Ibike next to him or with others in. Not the same way that you would get with Jones, but you can get a good advantage from a player like Campbell. 38 years old now, but still can play football certifiably, and would love to have him for another round. Wouldn't mind having Clowney either for depth, but just either of those guys, they are cheap, so they're fine acquisitions that the Ravens presumably wouldn't have to give up very much at all for either of those players. But they, you know, if there was a cost in terms of a draft pick, there was a fifth round pick or something, that's too high. You know, it's either of those guys, a 6 for a 7, maybe a 5 for a 6 for Clowney because he's a little bit younger. But, you know, it shouldn't be much to get either of those guys. And obviously both those teams at this point should be looking towards 2025 and the draft there and how they can improve their marginal amount of capital going into that draft. Okay. Enough about Jones. Let's move over. Matt Ibike, tough game for him. He had one pressure as I scored it. It was actually, he flushed the quarterback into a run. I saw PFF had him for 3 pressures in the game. I can't duplicate that. I've got only one. It could be that PFF has given him credit for a late pressure. So if he chases down the quarterback as part of one of the many Bo Nix chase him all over the field plays, that's probably where that 2 pressure difference is. So I understand how they do it. Their grading is going to be good relative to it. And I don't think his pass rush grade ended up being particularly good for the game. Anyway, he's played better against the run. I thought he's been a good run defender during this time, very necessary run defender when the Ravens have been short on defensive linemen. The Ravens probably got more than they could have expected out of both the combination of Wormley and Tupou. Tupou probably didn't play great. Wormley had a pressure in the game, so he did some things. But Matt Ibike, you know, in some ways, he can't be a particularly useful pass rush asset with the roster as currently constructed. At least if you're going to do it, you need to do some other schematic things to get after the quarterback. Patrick Queen in the pick play was something that's brought up to me today. And that's a possibility. It could be, you know, use Roquan Smith on a pick play or whatever, where you run him through a gap or across the face of a guard and into the center's shoulder or into the tackle's shoulder across a guard, where you create space for a Matt Ibike to loop and get to the quarterback. So you can do some things like that. But as it stands right now, his running mate is not going to create a lot of value for him as a twister or as a way to get him one-on-one opportunities. Adafi Owe, I thought, played okay. You know, had a little bit of pressure as I saw it. I think it might have been 2.5 pressures. I have my sheet right here. So Adafi Owe, I had for 3 full pressures in the game. So that's something. He was chasing after the Knicks on some of those plays. And the way I score them, 3 full pressures means he got the initial pressure on those plays. So, you know, it's worth something. I think people have underestimated who Owe is the whole year. He's having a good solid year. He could stand to have a few more finishes. Everybody could. But he's had more finishes than before. His pressure rate is still pretty good. And he's a guy who gives you a very well-rounded defensive value. He's signed next year. He's one of the players that the Ravens can try and get an extension on that might save them a lot of money. And that's one of the reasons I look at this team, and particularly a lot of the young assets on defense, they're in position. Travis Jones is here. He's coming to the end of year three, and they'll have to decide whether they re-sign him or not. You got Nate Wiggins, who's a young corner. That's nice. You got TJ Tampa. That's a hopeful project at this point. That's all it is. You've got Adisa Isaac, who you don't know what he is yet. You've got Tavius Robinson, who'll be entering year three and looks to be a green arrow up kind of guy. But they've got a lot of guys who are getting the end of their third year. Isaiah Likely and Tyler Linderbaum on the offense. Of course, Kyle Hamilton, who has a cheap fifth-year option available, Linderbaum does not, who will be all candidates to get extended this offseason. You throw in there the need to consider at least what the extension is of if you want to throw an extension at Ronnie Stanley. And it doesn't really leave you options on going out and spending money. Whatever you spend money right now on is going to eventually burn you. So, and everybody is always a little bit unhappy with where their team is at any point in time, but this team has a very good chance to compete for the AFC Championship. They lead the league offensively in a number of categories. They do not on defense, although they're not a rock bottom defense. They have some problems. I think they're problems that can be addressed possibly by getting a safety, hopefully cheaply. If they want to go for an expensive safety, I wouldn't be opposed to that because neither Marcus Williams or Eddie Jackson is going to be here next year. So that investment would potentially pay off if they want to go for a guy who's $5, $6, $7, $8 million a year and has a year or two left on his contract. I'd be okay with that at safety. They have some natural moves that I think they're going to make in terms of generating cap space for next year that will allow for some of these guys to be signed, but not all of them. They're not going to be able to keep everybody, which means they don't really want to go out and create a huge hole in the cap for next year the way they did with Odell Beckham. It was a huge mistake. And please spare me the discussion that Lamar wouldn't have signed without it. That might be true, but if you make that error the one time, that's the only time you need to make that freaking error. You just don't need to go out and get a player like that. They did a good job, I think, this year. In just a few days ago in picking up Deontay Johnson, who's cheap insurance at the position, and players like Campbell and Clowney, they meet that description. If they want to go down and get Marcus May from the Miami Dolphins, who should be sellers about right now, I think that would be a good idea. He's a guy who can certainly, I think, help the Ravens on the back end, has free safety experience and could be a guy they could plug in there. I'm not really all that concerned, honestly, even about the safety depth right now with Ardarius Washington playing so well, because we've seen a good game out of him. We saw Williams make a comeback game, which I'll talk about in a moment. And I think that that gives you hope that they could get by with that. But I think we're still kind of dealing with hope on that. I want a backup plan at safety. But I do think interior defensive line is probably the number one position, safety number two now, with the edge being the third position that I think they probably need to take care of. And right now, I wouldn't do anything for the offense at all. I would play the hand I'm dealt. I think that the offensive line has worked out to be probably good enough, or at least good enough to take a chance on, because the cost of bringing in a guard or a backup tackle or anything like that would be very high. I think they got to play the cards they're dealt. McCary has been a pleasant surprise in his play at left guard. I think he's overperformed what I would expect. That's taken the pressure off Voorhees to play well. So, a nice set of options they have on offense. They have all the skill position players they need right now. They have Keaton Mitchell coming back. Unless there's an injury somewhere, I think the Ravens have the players they need. It's crazy, but tight end, if Isaiah Likely's hamstring injury is anything serious, which is going to keep him out multiple weeks, that could actually be a position where they might want to have another backup. But I think Charlie Kolar will be fine moving up a notch in terms of his, relative target share and snap share. The guy they need to get then would be for the end of the roster to be that third active tight end, or they just need to play more Ricard and use those three guys in the combination of fullback and tight end roles the way they have, just with everybody being a little bit happier about their snap share if one of them is out. Anyway, that's enough about Owe, who we're talking about specifically. Let's talk about Tavius Robinson, because Tavius Robinson had one of the really cool games you'll ever see. And he finished, but he didn't start much himself at all, and still had what I would say is an extremely good game. Two sacks. The first one, he touched down Knicks for an S0. Actually, Knicks just slid basically right at his feet. Never actually, he didn't have to touch him down because he's declared down after leaving a clean pocket. He got his second sack when he disengaged very late from McGlinchey, the right tackle, that Notre Dame right tackle from he's been in the league about 7 years now, I guess. I'm getting old. But that shut down a 3rd-and-2 opportunity in the third quarter. They got him off the field on three plays. He had two late quarterback hits, one of which Owe had a opposite side pressure on. And another one is at the end of the game, Q4 10:59, where he chased down Knicks by that right sideline, delivered a very hard QH, and he still threw a pass for 18 yards to Sutton on the play. It was a fine day of getting after the quarterback. He didn't do anything stupid and have a rough the passer penalty, even though Knicks was begging for one on one play. He was touching his head and saying, "Oh, he hit me here." But he didn't have a single pass rush event within 3 seconds. So I look at that and I say, okay, all of that is great, but not having a pass rush event within 3 seconds is not going to make you a great pass rusher. He did have a nice assist on a run tackle of Burton for a loss. And he also had a pass defense where he dislodged the ball from Krull very hard. What I like about that is nice to see Tavius Robinson drop into coverage and occasionally make a play there, because that's part of the job description for outside linebacker. And if you're on the Ravens, especially the Ravens of recent years, they do a fair amount of that. And this was a nice play for that. All right. So Tavius had a good game and certainly was one of the very visible players on this defense in this game. Kyle Van Noy had a pretty good game. He delivered some pressure, 3.5, 3 fulls and a half pressure as well himself. So similar to Owe from the other side. Didn't finish in the game, didn't get either a quarterback hit or a sack, which is unfortunate. But at least he's in there imperiling the cone and forcing Knicks to start moving around. Even if some of that is happening, not well, these are all on time. These are all within 3 seconds. But whenever he's chasing down the quarterback, there is value to that. I don't want to say there's no value, but the initial pressure is usually what I look for in terms of how I'm scoring a football game. All right, let's talk a little bit about Simpson. Now, Trenton Simpson had an outstanding game, best game of his career to date. He didn't have a perfect game. Let's go the bad news first. He failed to cover Williams, the running back, who was somehow free in the middle of the field, and Bo Nix channeled his inner Lamar, threw back over the middle, which you're not supposed to do as you roll right, and you do it late. But this was a low-risk throw, to say the least, because there wasn't anyone within 10 yards of Williams. He caught the ball and rumbled for 24 yards of yak. And when you look at the tape, it's pretty clear that Simpson is the only guy who could have really been responsible for that area. And he chased a guy running through his zone and kind of forgot the zone defense notion, which is a Patrick Queen kind of thing to do. Yeah, Patrick Queen is coming to mind with a few Trenton Simpson things about this game. We'll get to that in just a minute. He did a reasonably good job shedding blocks, I thought, in this game in particular. At the end of quarter one, he shed a block from Forsyth, where it appears he's being held, but then he helps make a tackle on an RM1. Good gap filling in the game. He got good position. Another. This is not exactly shedding, but Bowles had a good block on the outside on Wormley, and he had to make a decision to go inside or outside. And actually, Roquan Smith had the inside covered, so he went outside and he ended up making the tackle of McLaughlin for a gain of just one on a play that's getting stretched out to the left. So, positive there. He penetrated himself to take down Burton for a loss of one. That was the one that Tavius assisted him on. And then he had a PD when he dislodged the ball from Vele, the wide receiver, right near the line of scrimmage. No, it wasn't. It was about 5 to 7 yards past the line of scrimmage, as I recall, down the left sideline. But anyway, another, what is encouraging about what's going on is he's making plays in coverage. He's making plays as a pass rusher. He's making plays in run defense. It's a nice balanced mix of things he's doing. He and Hamilton were underneath on a 33-yard pass that went to Sutton. I did not, I couldn't definitively say who was responsible for that play, whether it was Hamilton or he, but it was obviously a tough play. And then the big one on third and goal from the 1 yard line. And this is on the Broncos second to last drive. He was very patient with the 4-man pass rush. Nix finally broke the pocket after about maybe 5.5 seconds or so. He raced up. Nix incredibly could not evade him. Nix was evading, outrunning everybody pretty much the whole day, but he twisted him right down for a sack minus 13. And it was really nice to see that speed again. It was not something that the Ravens had it with Patrick Queen, and that was probably Patrick's greatest asset as a player, probably still is. Is his ability to rush the passer and really speedily make a choice on how to exploit a choice of gaps. And that's something that, Queen did well. And I see it in Simpson now as well. So here's the Patrick Queen thing. Let's start with how Patrick Queen is playing in Pittsburgh. He's not playing very well. And if you look at the PFF scores, they're not good. If you look at his missed tackle rate, it's not good, but it's consistent with the rest of his career. I think the Steelers were smart to construct that contract the way they did, but it looks to me that Queen is going to be a free agent again come this offseason because the Steelers can save about $10 million of cap by doing so, and he's not playing well. I can't construct a reason for leadership purposes. They might want to keep Queen around. I think they've probably got other leaders on that defense, Minka and others who are probably much more suited to that sort of responsibility. Queen's still young at 25, and I don't catch any part of this in my voice to indicate that the Ravens should try and get Queen back. I think that'd be a big mistake if they have Roquan and Simpson to make a move for a player like Queen. But I think he'll be on the market again this offseason. And, we still keep seeing week after week comments being made about the breakup of Batman, Roquan Smith, and Robin, Queen in this case. And all I see is, why is no one comparing Queen to Simpson? Simpson is outplaying Queen by such a margin this year, it's not even funny. The biggest thing about these players comparatively is Queen's missed tackle rate is 16.9%. And by the way, his career missed tackle rate 16.1%. So it's not like this is a way out of character year for him. And Simpson's missed tackle rate is 5.8%. Okay. if you look at this further, the metric I like is the ratio of stops and their defensive wins to missed tackles. Okay. It's like the strikeout to walk ratio for a pitcher. You have, extremely good events and extremely bad events there mixed into one. For 2024, Queen's ratio, his 10 stops, he has 11 missed tackles for 0.91. That's utterly terrible, by the way. I was figuring this for every draftable inside linebacker this last draft. And the guy who shows up very well is Peyton Wilson, who is, I think, Queen's backup now in Pittsburgh, and I think they're going to be happy to move on to him in year two of the Queen contract. But he was at, like, I want to say 11-1 last year. He was completely outrageously different. And there's one guy that was in about the 6 or 7-1 range as well. Well, Simpson, I mentioned Queen's ratio this year is 0.91-1, which is awful. Queen's career ratio is 1.98-1, which is also very bad. 2-1 is not what you want at all. Simpson's 2024 ratio, 19-3. That's 6.33-1. And for his career, it's 5.5-1. It's not a whole lot of additional data there, but take everything you can, you scrape it together, you still have a player who is at or near the top of all NFL linebackers in limited data. So I think there's evidence there. The good news is that Simpson should be around and should be a guy who gets more playing time in the second half of the season. And there's also evidence that the Ravens really should not feel like they're missing Patrick Queen. I think Simpson is going to give them more in the second half of this year. So very happy to have him. And this might be a case where instead of 80% of the player at 20% of the price, they got 130% of the player at 15% of the price. So hopefully this is people will feel like this was a good exchange to have Simpson. I guess I'll toss this out there. Hit me up with when I promo this show, hit me up with a comment if you think that the Ravens really should miss Queen for some reason. I'd love to hear it. I'd love to hear the reason, because Simpson's been as good as Queen ever was with the Ravens in coverage. Neither of them is having a great pass rush year, but Simpson looks like he might be starting to provide a little bit there. I'm trying to find the reason why somebody would be saying, yeah, Queen is a guy we got to have. All right, let's move on. Let's stop beating a dead horse there and talk a little bit about Wiggins' game. Wiggins was terrific, played a fairly limited number of total snaps, and I'll get the number of pass snaps for you here as well. But, okay, so this is, again, without penalties, played 30 snaps, and 18 of those were pass plays. He was targeted just one time on those 18 plays. So we all kind of, I think, saw who was the primary target of the Bo Nix love fest of our secondary. And that was Stevens primarily, but they really didn't go after Wiggins. And that's a very good sign for a rookie cornerback. He needs to be very sticky in coverage, and they don't travel. So the Broncos had the opportunity to test out Wiggins with whoever they chose to test him with when he was on the field. So if they wanted Sutton against him, they could have tried Sutton, some back shoulders, some deep jump balls, whatever Sutton gives you, or whatever you think he gives you that has value. If they wanted somebody else who's a little bit shiftier, they could have used a Vele maybe against him and try to beat him with some man looks. They didn't look like they had any notion to go after Wiggins in this game. And the fact that he's only targeted once, I'd look at very positively. I thought his coverage looked good, and he gave up 1 9-yard play. I believe that was actually a zone play. It was a play in front of him where he and another ran up and made the tackle. So happy with Wiggins, happy to see him healthy again. And the Ravens are really going to need him down the stretch. And the next player I want to talk about is Brandon Stevens, who obviously had a very difficult game. And I do think the Broncos went after him specifically. They knew where he'd be. He's always on that left side of the field. And that means other teams, if they want to put their bigger back shoulder body out receiver on Stevens, they're able to do it. And Stevens being a guy who chases the receiver and the receiver's hands primarily, wants to play those things instead of the football, is going to be extremely vulnerable to that in particular. So not a great game for Stevens in this one. He was targeted. Let me see, how many times did he get targeted in this one? Oh, sorry about this. A little bit of delay here. Yeah, looks like he's targeted 8 times, 5 receptions for 95 yards. Now for the year, this number is not good. He's given up 514 yards in 53 targets, which is almost 10 per target. Not what you want. So he's coming up on a free agent year at a time when it's not ideal for him. And maybe this is a divisible benefit situation. If the Ravens feel like he's a guy that they want to ride with, they might be able to get him cheap now. He's signable because he's already passed 3 years.
Everything is better on a boat, and your vacation is no exception. This year, experience the world's most beautiful destinations aboard your own private yacht charter with The Moorings. Our fleet of modern custom-designed yachts is just one reason we were recently voted Best Caribbean Yacht Charter Company by readers of Caribbean Journal. So when you next explore the Virgin Islands, the Bahamas, or elsewhere, don't accept anything less than The Moorings. Your vacation time is precious, so make the most of your freedom on the water. Book your perfect charter at moorings.com. Nothing less than The Moorings.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets. guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get 10 for $10 on select varieties of Kroger pasta, Starkist tuna pouches, or Powerade with your card. Then get 6 ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.88 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Years. You don't have to wait till the end of this year like you would for Travis Jones or for some of the other third-year players, likely. But you could actually have contract discussions right now and bring it back. I don't think the Ravens would be all that excited about doing it based on the information that they've seen this year so far. He hasn't been nearly as effective as he was last year. Last year, he was targeted a lot. And for most of the year, he was good at not giving up yards per target. But the last four games of the year, well, let me just not guess. I'm going to bring up his 2023 stats and talk about how bad it was towards the end of the year, because it was bad. So he continued to be targeted. I targeted 118 times, which had to be near the top of all cornerbacks last year, including the postseason. And he gave up 814 yards, which is less than 8 yards per target. Well, he's gone up by over 2 yards per target this year. It might be substantially over, because it was actually 814 divided by 118. I'll just do that real quick. So is that 6.90 yards per target actually last year? And now he's at probably very close to 9.90 yards per target. So he's up by about 3 yards per target. That's unacceptable. And there have been some things that haven't been too bad, but last year he was penalized 5 times the entire season. And this year, I don't think he's been too bad on penalties. He has had, oh, come on now. Yeah, he's had 3 penalties so far. So basically on a similar track, but 116.4 passer rating against with 3 TDs and no interceptions. And that's not going to cut it. So Brandon Stevens is not in a good position in terms of his contract. And if the Ravens felt like, could be two things. They can move him to safety if they really felt like that was the thing to do. I think Stevens would go kicking and screaming into that. Or they could just decide, you know, we think we see the traits we have to make him a good cornerback. He's played a lot of snaps for us. He's learning his craft still because of all the position changes he's made already in his career. But they could have him, and they could have him, I think, pretty cheaply as of right this moment. And I think come the end of this year, he may also be cheap. He may be a little bit more expensive, but that's some of the divisible benefit you have on the table. Try and get that player to sign early, in exchange for some financial security right now. And Brandon Stevens, a third round pick originally, has made, a modicum only of money from his initial contract in terms of signing bonus. So this next contract for him, this is where he's going to earn most of his career earnings. Even if he goes into a pretty lucrative field after his career, this is going to be a lot of it. So he needs to make the most of it. I'm sure his agent would advise him wisely in those terms. And this might be a good time to try and get to the table with the Ravens and figure out if there's a deal to be made. Let's talk about Marcus Williams a little bit. Came right off the bench last week, started the game, made a statement play, I thought, knifing in there for the nice takedown of by the right sideline. I forget who the receiver was. Doesn't really matter. But great play, and it showed that he just wanted to make tackles again. He wanted to play like a guy who wants to fly around the football field, and we've seen that from Marcus in his first couple of years, and And, you know, he on a per snap basis, he's been terrific in 2022 and 23. Not so much this year, but I think this last game was a very good sign. I think it was his best game of the year in terms of probably multiple things. Thought he had a pretty good coverage game. He did give up 1 2-yard reception the entire game. It was for a touchdown. So that was the one in the end zone. I forget who might have been Humphrey who scored that one. It was in the back. That might have been Sutton also. But it was on the 4th-and-2 play that he gave up that touchdown. But anyway, a good game for Marcus, and hopefully there's more to come, because we've talked about this in the past. There really isn't anybody that can do what Marcus does for this team right now. They either have to go out and get it, which means they've got as I record this, about 16 hours to make that deal work, or they need to ride with Marcus Williams, which they can do, and he's given them a little bit of reason in this last game to believe that he might do it. There's obviously some sort of friction between him and Orr, or him and Harbaugh. Sounds like it might have been more with Orr and basically not liking how his role within the scheme works. Maybe he thinks he knows better, and honestly, you never know. Maybe he does know better. But the fact of the matter is he's got to make this work for his own reasons. He's probably going to be looking for a new contract somewhere as a free agent next year. He needs the rest of this year to go well on the field with the Baltimore Ravens, because otherwise there won't be a whole lot for another team to go on. He'll be looking at a 1-year prove it deal, try and get started again somewhere else. You know, that might work out. It might not, depending on the scheme. He knows he can be successful with the Ravens. He's certainly been successful with the other players, whether or not the scheme is different this year. But whatever the case, Marcus Williams being given a second chance. Some of that I really attribute to Harbaugh, the Ravens organization in general, not burning the guy at the stake publicly. Had they done that, for whatever he'd done, then, you know, there wouldn't be an opportunity to rectify this situation. There wouldn't be an opportunity to restart Marcus Williams the next week as they did. And they got a pretty good game out of him. The time that I remember this happening very fondly, and I'm sure people will remember this, is that in 2003, Chris McAllister missed a game for an unspecified reason in San Diego. So he flew out there with the team. He was in the team hotel. At least he was alleged to be in the team hotel. And then he got sent home before the game was played, and they played with somebody else at cornerback. They won that game anyway, which is fortunate. But McAllister, the Ravens never let that out, why McAllister missed that game. Now, there could be reasons for it, because if there had been some sort of drug violation, for example, then that might have had to been reported to league in a way that wouldn't have gone well for the Ravens. So they could have had other reasons for keeping the thing internal. If it was women involved, there's no real reason to tell the league about it. And there's every reason to basically be an advocate for your player if you want that player to work out. But anyway, it was 2003. So I finally got a chance to ask that question at a State of the Ravens event for Sweetholders, is, you know, what happened this game? So first of all, he'd just been benched. This is in 2008. So after the 2008 season, so he'd just been benched in 2008 in that Miami game. So he went down to Miami. They had a 2-3 record, and McAllister was benched, and he never played regularly again for the Ravens after that. And he was eventually traded to the Saints. But I asked Harbaugh about it, and he said, look, it's all about his play on the field. Doesn't have anything to do with that. And I've told you guys this before. I wasn't a member of the press at the time, but he apparently thought so. And he said, it didn't have anything to do with that. And I said, okay, follow up for Ozzy. Why did he miss that game at San Diego in 2003? And Ozzy wouldn't answer the question. I said, I realize I haven't answered your question, but I'm not going to answer your question. Normally at those events, you can ask them whatever you want, and they'll give you an answer as best they're able. You get much less tarted up answer than you would at the podium at any time during the year. So that, by the way, if you ever get a chance from your company to go to that event, highly recommend it. It's about the most fun Ravens event that's held. The other one is Johnny Unitas Golden Arm. Always go to that if you can, particularly if you want to just meet some of the old athletes who are, happy to have a conversation with you, happy to have somebody who remembers them a little bit. That's a very cool thing to do as well. All right. So anyway, we did all that in talking about Marcus Williams. Hopefully Marcus Williams is back. Hopefully Marcus Williams is playing for the foreseeable future, because, like I say, there's not really an alternative. Next player, Ardarius Washington. Let's talk about him because he had a very fine game. I'll talk about his snap count first in terms of what he did and who he's in for. But he played the strong safety role when Hamilton did not, which basically means all of those big nickel snaps, he was in the game. He did, in fact, play 38 total snaps. So he played also some snaps after Hamilton retired for the game as well. So 38 total. He wasn't targeted a bunch in this game. He did make a really nice play to get an interception on the first target. The second target, he dislodged the football with kind of a strip, top to bottom strip, on a play that looked good as well. So, you know, Ardarius, I don't think he could have done more in this game to prove through those two plays that he's worthy of more trial at strong safety. But then on the final Denver play of the game, you saw Wiggins starting to make the tackle on the receiver who looked like he was headed in for a touchdown. Looked like it was going to be if it was just Wiggins to make the tackle. But Washington came up, hammered him. I think it might have been Sutton too, who's big, and kept him out of the end zone. 7 points on the scoreboard in a 41-10 game. It's not the end of the world by any means, but I loved seeing that from Ardarius Washington, because one of the questions, of course, have been, can he really tackle at his size? And to see him make a play and, you know, put his fist up in the air as if it was fourth down, but it's not fourth down. It's actually Baltimore ball. He should have been signaling. But anyway, it was a great play. Really happy that he could do that. He did enough things very well in this game that I think he stays at strong safety. And Eddie Jackson, even if they'd meant for this to be a 1 week only attitude adjustment benching for Jackson, I think he's lost his job to Williams as of right now. I think Jackson's just been so poor this year that I don't think there'd really be a reason to go back to him. And we really haven't seen Ardarius Washington make the same sort of coverage mistakes yet that Eddie has. So, you know, it's going to be Eddie is on the cusp of being released, probably. If you had to look at what would happen if the Ravens did acquire a safety, I think there's a reasonable chance that he would be the player released. He's got some guaranteed money. I think at this point, that's a sunk cost. His total cost of his contract is $1.5 million or something. It's not a whole lot. Not so much that they have to worry about the money involved. And I think they very well may do that to upgrade the position. And the reason, if they were going to not trade for a safety right now, I think the reason would be they really liked what they saw from Williams and Washington in this game and are ready to ride with those guys. And of course, Hamilton does play some of those back end snaps and gives you an, you know, added value back there. It gives you more value than even Washington does or Williams. But the problem is you're losing the value of having Hamilton up close to the line of scrimmage where he's a terror. So you really prefer to have him there. And they do. Okay. Let's move on. Let's talk a few mailbag questions here, because I know there were a few and I want to get to as many as possible here. Okay. Again, please, if you're going to use Film Study Mailbag, please do not DM me a question like this, because I can't then sort it in the tweet deck or look for it in a way that I can find it. I want to be able to, you know, just search for hashtag film study mailbag, and then all the questions come up at once and I can look through and I can pick the ones I want. That's the ideal situation. So anyway, first question is from Randy Morgan, who says, what is the most draft pick comp you would be willing to give up for a top pass rusher? Parsons, Crosby, assuming the cap could work. Okay. I can't really separate that question, because the assuming the cap could work, or the regard, anytime anybody puts a extra phrase like regardless of cap on a situation, it means the most important element of putting together a football team is being ignored. The cap is the ultimate master. So if we're talking about if let's say Crosby was being taken as a rental for this year, so the Raiders are going to pick up every single dollar he has on his contract, and the Ravens can decide whether or not next year they even want to keep Crosby because his contract is so rich. If that were to happen, like, what would I want Crosby for at $1 million? Um, Yeah, I'd give up a second round pick, I think. You only get him for 8 games plus the postseason. So you'd have to be sure that he was going to be a big marginal gain. The problem is that, and Parsons, maybe I give up a little bit more for, like them both. But maybe I give up a little bit more for Parsons. The issue is that, you only get this guy for half a year. You end up giving away what, 20% of your draft capital for next year if you give away a second, or even a little bit more than that. It's not as exciting as people want to make it be. The guys who would have to lose snaps in order for it to really work out would be players like Van Noy and Owe, who aren't the problem with the pass rush right now, or at least they're not as big a problem. The problem is that they don't have an interior pass rusher who's going to drive the whole thing. And I'd be afraid that even if they got Crosby, that would still be the case, that Crosby would start to take more of the attention away. And maybe that creates a few better opportunities. But I'm not sure you get the same kind of marginal gain that you do from having Travis Jones back and having the entire pass rush working again. So I can't, there's two parts to your question, Randy. I can't toss away the draft compensation because that's so fundamental to how you put together a football game. And then in terms of how much you'd want, how much draft capital you want to give up for him for 8 games, or we'll call it 11 if you want to include postseason, say, I've got to come up with still what I think is a fairly moderate number there for you, that probably a lot of people are going to say you're ridiculous. You're straight a first and a third kind of thing. Well, no, I got to care about putting together a team now. Let's look at it this way. This Ravens offense right now is playing like no offense ever has, pretty much. Or if it is any other offense, it's the greatest offenses of all time. Think of them as the 1966 Beatles. Okay? What happened in 1967 to the Beatles? John Lennon acquired Yoko Ono. Okay? That is not what we want for this football team. Yoko Ono, in terms of a player they would either trade for, or that they would acquire as with a large expense and a restructure for a contract next year, will break up the team because he'll force you to not be able to re-sign any of your third year guys, or as many of your third year guys. And so you have to end up losing some of those. At some point, you just got to play with the players you have and be excited about how good this team is, young and good on both sides of the ball. And yeah, they're going to still have to fix some problems in the draft, and they better have their draft capital to do it next year. Left tackle comes to mind. Ronnie Stanley could be the Ravens' Yoko Ono if he's re-signed. He could be the guy who prevents several other contracts from getting signed. So it's a huge decision for the Ravens whether they find their next left tackle in the draft, whether they sign Stanley, or however they decide to address the position. But you don't want to end up like the Beatles and have the band with a seemingly useful creative advisor added to the team who then breaks the entire band up 3 years later because you just can't afford to have her around. Anyway, metaphor aside, let's move on. Next question will go from Alvindo Royale. He says, I see lots of calls for bend, but not break defense. I disagree. I feel they need to go max variance given how good the offense is. Also, with how the season has gone, it's been more bend than break. How would you play it, bend or go for high variance? Oh, Alvindo, if you've been listening to the show, you know how I feel about it. Absolutely, variance is king. All defenses really need to go for a lot of variances. The Ravens have under-varianced in an average degree. They're nowhere near an average team in terms of really seeking out that variance. Yes, I think they need more. And I think you actually need to go for it longer into games. Like when you have the lead, you should still be seeking variance. And in particular, where you have a lead of a touchdown for sure, but also a field goal, oftentimes the best thing is to go for variance and try and create a situation where you get one of two outcomes, either a fast score by the opponent, which gives you a second chance, known as a redraw opportunity, or you make a play and get off the field. Sometimes a turnover, sometimes a big sack that makes it very difficult for them to convert. But it's just too difficult to stop four down football in particular without taking on lots of variance. When even early in games, wanting variance to stop three down football is a good idea as well. And they did that to Well, they've done that to other teams this year. They did not do it to Denver in this game. And I think it ended up being the right choice, given the nature of the win. I just don't think it'll work versus every team. So put me down in the high variance category. Let's move on. Brad McGowan. Hey, film study, is there anything the Ravens can do to help Stevens? We're getting tired of him constantly in position, but failing to make a play. Denver didn't even try and throw down the field I'm not sure what this is, zero right, where Humphrey Wiggins lined up. Okay. They didn't try and throw the ball to the right side where Humphrey and Wiggins lined up. Well, he's right about that. They really threw not at all at Wiggins, and they threw at Stevens all day with those eight targets. I think, you know, clearly it's on film now to no uncertain degree that Stevens is a very sticky corner who is extremely susceptible to the back shoulder because of the way he over pursues the hands of the receiver and doesn't look back for the football. He's big receivers who can turn on or who can sit in the chair well to decelerate and then turn for a pass, which is every receiver, honestly, are going to give him trouble probably for his entire career until he takes other training on to really change the way he plays. At this point, I think it's so ingrained with Stevens as a fourth-year player. I think the only thing that would really change him to being a look at the quarterback guy would be to move to safety. And I'm not suggesting that's the ideal situation, but if it were ever to occur because the Ravens are just out of options, I wouldn't be opposed to it. I think, you know, if they all of a sudden lost two more safeties this year, you know, God forbid that would happen. But I, you know, moving him to safety and having Humphrey play one side and Wiggins the other, I think would be a very reasonable alternative to try and solve, obviously, a very bad situation. All right, let's go back to Randy Morgan. Another question here. Do you see this performance as a real step forward or more of a mirage due to Nick's missing some throws and the fourth down variance? Very reasonable question. I said on, I believe, both these shows, I don't really believe this is replicatable against some other quarterbacks. The Ravens have, generally speaking, all the quarterbacks they faced who've been good have massively overperformed their opportunity set. Nick's underperformed it by about 51 yards. Burrow was plus 140, for example. That's who they face next week, or, you know, in 3 days. I don't know whether to call it a mirage. It's an oasis, but now they're having to move back into the desert, and they're going to have to see whether or not they can stop a Burrow with the cards they have. So we'll see. The fourth down variance, it was good in this game. They played well on fourth down. They converted opportunities, and they got the, you know, a positive result with the Broncos just going 1 for 5 on fourth down. So it's another good point to make about that is they can't really expect to have a 20% conversion rate on fourth down when they can only stop the opponent, 55% of the time or whatever it is on third down. Okay. Got another question from Brad McGowan here. He says, Nick's completed a deep over to Franklin on the left side of the offense with Humphrey in trail coverage. On the broadcast, Romo pointed out the problem with the Ravens D being that the players weren't coordinated in coverage drops. He specifically called out Roquan, who in response to the fake flows initially to the offense's right following Nick's, while the rest of the defense is flowing left in their coverage drops. Roe corrects and tries to recover, but ends up out of position, allowing Nick's to fit the pass over him. Romo indicated this is a consistent problem. It seems more like a player execution issue than a play call issue. Any thoughts on how the Ravens fix this? It seems like we just need the players to play better and trust their teammates will do their jobs. Okay, I respect Tony Romo and the amount of film he's watching on this, and there's no doubt about it that Roquan Smith is not able to make the kind of deep drops that he probably has been able to in better times. He's also, he's just not suited to be that sort of player, and very few linebackers are. Trenton Simpson is an exception, being a converted safety that'll understand better how to fit that. But a lot of times what you're looking for from a linebacker is just for him to drag the route, a particular vertical route of a receiver. Sometimes it's a tight end in the seam, and keep the quarterback from getting an easy throw, force him to make an up and down throw. Those up and down throws are where a lot of problems happen for NFL quarterbacks. If there's any kind of pressure, often that ball will sail on them or it'll come in short and it's at risk of it being intercepted either way. But that's it usually still creates a fairly easy, it looks like a pitch and catch opportunity when it happens and you see it on TV, but that's all that can really be expected that play. So, you know, defenses are weak between level two and level three. The safety really has to be responsible for doing more of that. And a lot of what they do is taking away those routes before the quarterback throws the football, not necessarily just coming down and making the tackle. Usually the horse is out of the barn by the time the quarterback throws, because he's throwing to an open receiver. So what you need to do on some of these routes is have methods that allow you to bring down a player, a robber would be typically called, to take away or erase that route from hurting you. And in so doing, you make yourself vulnerable in other places as soon as you make that commitment. And that's what offensive football is all about, is trying to basically get players who have a choice to face a dilemma that they cannot solve in terms of spacing. So if you look at all kinds of route concepts, you'll see players that are basically overloading zones or clearing out zones to make it very difficult for the player who has the primary coverage responsibility there to react to what's going on and then give the quarterback a choice of two targets. I respect what Romo is saying about that. I'm guessing he probably watched a lot of Ravens films. I think if you're really calling out Roquan's got to get deeper to do that, the real problem may be, or is expecting Roquan to do too much on that play. And it's more likely that I think the safeties all year have not been doing nearly what they need to do in terms of making sure that the area between level two and level three is not an enormous vacant parking lot for the quarterback to throw into at will. So, I appreciate the question, Brad. It's very well thought out, and he's been a guest. If you've heard him any number of times on Shorts, always brings extremely good content when he's on, and always love talking football with you, Brad. Well, that's it for the questions tonight. We'll go back for a second. I'll give you my three MVPs in this game. I didn't do that yet, and my number three MVP I'll start with is Trenton Simpson. Great game, a lot of different positives he showed in this game. Did get beat once on a very bad coverage breakdown, probably the worst coverage breakdown of the day for the Ravens in terms of allowing that 34-yard play in the middle of the field to Williams. But otherwise played very well, and I think he gives me a lot of good feelings, not only about what he might do for the rest of the year, but about the fact that the Ravens moved on from Patrick Queen. It had to happen anyway, but I think it was the Ravens can now look back at that move very favorably. Tavius Robinson, my number two guy, terrific game. And that was a lot of late pressure in this game. So it's not, I wouldn't say he had a great pass rush game, but he finished and he got two sacks. One of them was kind of cheapy slide into his legs kind of situation. The other was a sack minus nine that was converted very late, but it did end a drive, and drive ending plays, you know how I feel about them. He had two other quarterback hits. Always love any time when the opposing quarterback can be put on the ground and it doesn't draw a roughing the passer penalty. So he did well there. He had a good play in coverage. He had a good play against the run. Again, a case of a guy who is grown a lot in year two to be a significantly better player. And I think we have a lot of reason to hope that Tavius Robinson is going to be a significant young player now for the next couple of years. In fact, this bye week coming up, I'll do the breakdowns of the roster on both for the offense and defense with Brian McFarland. At least that's the plan. And Brian and I break it up into five categories: the young producers, the speculative players, the growth players that you're hoping will work out who are still young, then the veterans who are paying off for you, the veterans who are potential cap casualties, and then the transient players who are just, you know, they're placeholders on your roster. They're coming through and they're not going to be with the team for particularly long. But we look at the entire roster like that, usually including the practice squad. And I would now put Tavius Robinson in the young producer category as of this game. I think this game is the one where he gets elevated from being a young hopeful. I'm forgetting what I call that second group, but you know, a young player who we hope advances to being a young producer, to anyway, at this point now being a young producer. So very excited about the game, very positive on that. And then the MVP of the game, it's pretty easy. Kyle Hamilton in this game. He was all over the field. I don't even think I talked about him in the individual player things, but he had a very nice play near the line of scrimmage. Every tackle on the strong side of the football field, he seemed to be right there. They did have a 33-yard play that went over him and Simpson and underneath Stevens. That is a question of who really had responsibility for. He made a fine set of plays. He drew a holding call on Bowles that negated a run left 9 for the touchdown. If you don't remember that, Nix ran in for the touchdown. They threw it. They brought it back for a holding call. Enormous play in the game. And that was at 2:15. I think they ended up settling for a field goal in that situation. And so the Ravens had an easier time of it from that point forward. He did get flagged for a face mask. I tell you, I could not see the face mask in the replay of that. It looks like his head goes down. It doesn't look like he argued about it, but it didn't look like to me like he actually got the face mask, but maybe he picked up some portion of it with a finger or maybe it was a great sales job by the receiver at that point, Vele. He's doing everything again. There was some concern earlier this year that Hamilton really wasn't playing as well for the first two games anyway. But he's playing at an all-pro level right now. I don't doubt for a second that he's going to get there again this season. And the Ravens will have a chance to extend him if they so choose. If they don't feel like they've got the money this year, they can wait another year and do it after his 2025 season, when he will be then entering a guaranteed fifth-year option that the Ravens will pick up. I'm 100% sure of that. So the Ravens, I believe, in Kyle Hamilton, have a future Ring of Honor player. They will basically seal the deal with the next contract he signs. And I sometimes hate to put a jinx on this, because I thought it was true, certainly, of Ronnie Stanley when he signed his extension, that this basically guaranteed a spot in the Ring of Honor. And unfortunately, things haven't worked out perfectly. But Hamilton is certainly a top shelf star in this league. And of all the players you're looking at, the Ravens re-signing and making sure they don't let get away, he's one of them. And you can't have any of these Yokos around who would make that potentially not happen. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening tonight. Really appreciate it, as always. Appreciate the mailbag questions. If you'd like to do the show a favor, a 50-word 5-star review is always highly valued on your favorite podcast platform, or just show the show to somebody else. Somebody maybe doesn't know podcasts, go ahead and show them how to play it off the website. And maybe they'll appreciate this sort of content and become a regular listener. Thanks again for listening, and I'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good, all 100% free.
What if I had 3 jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.